This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. It's Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. It's another Town Hall Academy. We are at the Institute Summit in Amelia Island, Florida. Okay, so I left Buffalo with 4 feet of snow, and I came down here. Of course, it snowed last night. No, it didn't. I'm only kidding. What beautiful weather going on here, and we're so happy to be here at the Institute Summit. We're here February 6th through 9th recording this, so whenever you hear it, you'll know that it was a while back. Lots of stuff going on here. The theme is being stand out, and a lot of innovation being discussed, so we're really happy to be here. But before we get going, a couple of great words from our sponsors. Hey, take your auto care center to the next level, the gold level, with the NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. This program is for the best of the best who can provide a consistent consumer experience and earn the trust of returning and new customers. Talk to your NAPA sales representative about how you can become a gold certified shop. Hey, let's face it, your shop management system is the most critical tool in your shop, and NAPA Trax will move your shop into the SMS fast lane with on-site training, 6 days a week support, and local representation. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. I have a great team here today. I got Jason Brennan from Fine Tune Auto. Hi, Jason.
How you doing?
I am great, sir. How's business?
Going well, thank you.
And you're here to what? Hang out, learn, talk to your peers?
All the above.
Are you in a special group?
I'm in the Institute GPG Group 3.
Cool. Group 3.
Best one.
And that's the thing I love about the Institute's groups. There's a little bit of a rivalry there, isn't there?
Yeah.
I know. Your brother's here with you, Patrick Brennan. Hi, Patrick.
How you doing?
Good. You're not in the business, are you?
I'm not.
And we convinced him to come on because I think he may have some very interesting things to say.
I think he will.
Because I know he helps you a lot in the business. One of the things that I found fascinating about you guys, or especially the story you told me about the family plumbing business. So you were a family plumbing business, and what I want to know is, how did it become automotive?
That's a good question. I don't know if it was just that I did so much plumbing growing up, I was already tired of it by the time I started my career, or what it was. I don't know, but automotive, that's a good question. We've talked before. I started out working on lawnmowers and whatever. I was always just taking things apart, and that kind of just naturally progressed into working on cars. I was a technician, so got into the automotive business, but I don't think I would have had the fortitude or the courage to do it if I hadn't grown up. It certainly had helped to grow up in a household where, family business and a service business was the environment that I grew up around and in.
To me today, there's a lot of discussion out there about excellent customer service. If you forget about the customer, you might as well forget about your business.
Absolutely.
I don't know if we're getting enough customer service training. And I don't mean here's how you do it, but the service advisors at our counter today, I think it's the most considered educational series that I have seen anywhere. Every coaching company, including the Institute, they've got a great focus on that front counter and that customer experience.
I agree. They need to. They're service professionals. This isn't a job, and probably never should have been a job where, since I know how to fix cars, I'll just go up and maybe I'll write service and I'll advise customers. Can you explain to them the workings, the details of how the car works, why you should or shouldn't do the repair? Maybe. But it is a separate profession. You have to understand, as a service advisor, those people have to understand sales and they have to understand customer service. And they have to understand enough about the product that they're selling or recommending. And they have to understand all those things. And then if they're going to be a store manager, they need to understand business too. So it's a lot of stuff.
I'm curious, Jason, do they need to know more about themselves also? Because if you don't understand who you are and how you communicate, I think it's awfully tough to have it's my way or the highway kind of thing. There's got to be flexibility built into building relationships.
I would say yes, they do, because, a lot of people just have a naturally good communication style and ability. But let's face it, some of us don't. And so my natural style might not be the right style to be communicating to a customer with.
How'd you survive all these years?
So I know. I don't know.
It just happened. They loved you for some reason and they kept coming back.
No, I did. I took service advisor training when I wrote service, of course, and that helped.
That's great, by the way.
I needed it. It is great. And if I hadn't done it, I wouldn't be here.
You know, for you to realize this is a weakness, I may have to do something to fix that, or can I get better? And I'm on this soapbox of late, you know, this whole language shift thing that's going on in my world that I'm doing keynotes on. One of the most important things is the word, removing the word training, Jason, and making it the word education. Hmm. Because we train dogs, but we educate people. And we go to places to learn, and there's an educator in the room. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's right. Never thought of it that way, but that's true.
So if you sit down with your people, you've got his continuing education program for them. I'm going to send you off on a great training program. So when you come back, you'll be able to fetch the ball really well. I'm really being facetious and I'm really kind of kidding here.
Right.
But it just hit me so hard as, you know, the Super Bowl is being played in a couple of days from recording this. And I think about athletes, you know, going to training, doing training. And why are we calling what we're doing training? It's one of those lazy words that has crept into our industry. And I think in order to lift, even telling our customers, listen, our guys have gone through a continuous education program. In fact, they get 40 to 50 hours a year. I think it's important for the client to know what we invest. Well, why do you charge so much? We don't need to give them the litany of it, but I don't know if you know, but we send all our people to, you know, we're constantly educating them. About what? Do you have any idea what that computer is on four wheels and how it works? That's why you're here. Mm-hmm. All that stuff. And I think it could be incorporated into marketing. And Patrick, I know that's what you're helping your brother do. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, well, I have a background in home services and I kind of grew up in the home service business.
Wait a minute. Does it have anything to do with plumbing?
Yes, air conditioning and plumbing.
Okay.
That's kind of my background. But in my career there, I helped form our marketing budgets across a big business. So I learned a lot there, and that's kind of Jay bounces ideas off of me and I bounce ideas off of him. But I like what you said about training and education. To me, training sounds like it's not permanent, and education to me is an ongoing, continuous thing.
I love that.
I don't know. That's what I think about when I think of those two words. Well,
thank you for helping with that, because the more I talk to people, we've been gone for almost 10 days on a road trip and talking to so many people, and I've occasionally been known to. Come here, I have an idea. I want to run by you. But thank you for that. Some things that you're helping Jason with, you know, you say he tosses ideas back and forth. What's a recent one that you were able to use of your brother's, an idea?
The most recent thing we've been working on is reputation management.
Ooh.
So, I mean, we've been talking about it for years, but Patrick actually already had a software platform. He does all kinds of stuff. We don't have time to even talk about all the stuff that he's involved in, but one of the things is that he is doing reputation management for me and built a software, and him and I work together on a word tracks or a script, whatever you want to call it, things to say to customers that let them know we would appreciate them giving us a review, whatever it is. Just be honest, give us a review, and the software sends them a reminder, and then they give us reviews. We're able to get more reviews, and that's, you know, part of our reputation.
I think this is huge. Yeah. A reputation management piece of software. And using the words, is it written word, typed words, electronic words, or is it the words that we are helping our service advisors say?
I can speak to that a little bit. It's mainly like the service advisors, the people who interact with the customers. They know our system is going to send out a request for feedback to customers and to every customer. Now that they know that that's going to happen, they kind of prime the customers before they know they're going to get a request for the feedback on the service.
Do you educate them on that? I mean, how, you coach them? You rehearse that?
Yeah, actually, yes. And that rehearse is a good word. I think of rehearsal as a form. I think of that as training. So I would think education is, okay, I'm going to go learn about a topic. I'm going to understand it now. And I know the theory. And then training is repeating that, you know, repeating those words you want to memorize or that process that you want to follow or whatever it is. That's so we do training. Our service staff do training every morning from 7:30 to 7:45. So if you add that up, that's a lot of hours a year. and they do training with each other. And then on Fridays, we'll do a Google Meet. I'm usually there and all of them. So there's currently six counter people and myself. And then we'll take turns hosting that meeting. So whatever we've been training on, just like a sports team that runs plays over and over again, that's how you get good at it. Yeah. So we're getting good at it. We're practicing it. And so it becomes second nature and we could just do it on the spot and we could focus on the customer and not having to think about what process am I supposed to do right now? What am I supposed to say? Oh, yeah, it was that. And then, you know, because when you get busy, you know, sometimes it's like juggling chainsaws. I stole that phrase from one of my store managers. I thought it was funny, but it's kind of true. Those things need to be second nature.
I've fallen in love with what you just said. First of all, thanks, Carm. Education is the right thing to do. But when we have to make sure we solidify the process, the system, the greetings, the everything in the business, we're going to go train. I love it. 7:30 to 7:45, we train on service advising. Give me an idea of what they cover, what they do.
It could be anything that we need to be good at that we do a lot. So it could be listening. One example would be listening to playing back phone calls. How did we handle this phone call? Let's listen to it. Let's talk about it.
Is it public? Everyone gets a chance to listen each other's calls?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, in each store, it'll be, you know, the two counter people, they'll listen to each other's calls together and then critique it. You know, the once a week meeting that we're doing, it'll be one shop's turn to host and they'll play a call over the meeting and then everybody gets to critique it. So it could be phone calls. It could be, let's talk about this process for reviews, you know, this reputation management. How are we doing it? Let's talk about our inspection process. How do we do that? What kind of challenges did we have last week? What good things did we have last week? KPIs, you know.
I'm fascinated by your ROI. And chime in anytime, Patrick, but you're doing all of this. You're listening to each other's calls. You're motivating someone to maybe possibly get better. I could have done that. Have you seen a direct reflection in your sales growth because of this?
Absolutely, yeah. We've added a third store in the last year. So it's hard to say, you know, what the true growth would have been if we had three established stores. What I have for sure, what I can say I have noticed is I've noticed improvements.
Improvements where?
You mentioned the people's natural speaking style or something. Yeah. I've noticed improvements in the way that we communicate with customers because I can listen to calls and I can be there in the shops and observe what's going on and noticed an improvement in people's
confidence.
Confidence and willingness to learn. Because at first it's a little awkward. Jason comes in and goes, hey, guess what? We're going to play these calls that you screwed up on. So try to find your worst ones and then put them. That's what I want you to do. Find your worst ones because it's great to congratulate each other for the good ones, but we want to solve problems for you and figure out where we can improve. We're always trying to be the best. So do that. There were a bunch of good calls on those Zoom meet or those Google meets, but in one guy who I'm thinking of who has had, I think, the biggest improvement from where he started, played some pretty bad calls. And then he said, you know I screwed these up. That's what we're supposed to do here is to get better. We're supposed to be vulnerable and figure out, say, hey, this is what I'm having a struggle with. So I've seen huge improvements by doing that.
Is your software, does any AI on your calls?
We do. I haven't tried it yet. I have inbounds.
Yeah, I've seen the dashboard for inbound. Mm-hmm. And David Boyd's a great guy, and he's a sponsor on our network. When I saw the percentage of talking about tires, hey, you guys are talking about tires. We never sold tires. It's amazing how that can happen. The thing that I love about our discussion is that every morning we're working with the team for personal improvement.
Exactly. That kind of ties in. What I really liked about this summit so far was Dan's comment about teams. And because we're working on with our managers, especially, we're starting with managers and we're going to, you know, roll it out to everybody. We're working on figuring out what it takes to put together a good team and have a cohesive team. And something Dan said yesterday was that it's individuals on the team are what's going to ultimately make the difference between success and failure. People make the team succeed. The team's the team and everybody fails or succeeds together, but it's individuals who make that happen. So we do need to work on individual personal improvement to make the team what it needs to be.
It's amazing when you think about teams, and I love your analogy about each individual is an individual. You're getting ready to do a timing job, and you know that the tools you need to lay out, they all do a different thing. They all have their strength in the job. And when we put teams together, sometimes there's a broken tool.
Yeah, there could be. And, you know, if I was on a team, I am on a team. I'm kind of like the coach of three teams, sort of, if you will, with the three separate shops that count out. And then, or maybe the owner and the managers or the coaches. I don't know what the real deal is with that. But if there's somebody that's either not the right fit for the team or not performing, I know I wouldn't want to be that person.
But that's you. That's you, Jason. There are some people that are just willing to just go down the highway, get on the bus and go for the ride.
I think his process every morning training and rehearsing is really valuable because you can quickly identify individuals who are just not going to cut it on your team. If you're doing this very regularly and hopefully you're doing everything you can, that's what that provides as well too. And the education to me is more the why, you know, you understand the fundamental, the training, like Jason said, is like the rehearsing and just building the confidence.
EVs and other high voltage vehicles are changing the automotive landscape. Is your shop ready? With more than 16% of these light-duty vehicles on the road, you will have many opportunities to service them, but you must do safely and properly. Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with NAPA AutoTech's innovative EV-Ready Level 1 High Voltage Awareness and Maintenance Training. This four-day program is held in a fully functioning EV repair facility with all the latest high-tech equipment and technology needed to train your technicians to go from an EV maintenance tech to an EV battery service tech after completing the entire program. This four-day program is held in a fully functioning EV repair facility with all the latest high-tech equipment and technology needed to train your technicians to go from an EV maintenance tech to an EV battery service tech after completing the entire program. Each topic starts with intensive classroom training, followed by in-depth, hands-on practice, and students are tested on the knowledge they gained in the classroom. Technicians will learn on various hybrid and EV vehicles such as Tesla, Toyota, GM, Ford, Hyundai, and Nissan. This will allow them to make educated decisions on equipment needed in their own shop to perform repairs. This course is on site at the NAPA Automotive Research Center in Canton, Ohio. Attendance requires ASE 6 certification, EPA ASE 609 certification, and at least 5 years of shop experience. The total cost is only $4,000 per attendee, which includes the four-day course, hotel, breakfast, lunch, and the PPE needed to perform the services. Now, if you're a gold certified auto care, you can use your gold marketing funds to offset the cost. Hey, don't miss out on this invaluable opportunity to advance your team skills and ensure your shop is EV ready. Contact the NAPA Training Service Center at 800-292-6428 to secure your spot. Hey, let's face it. Your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the industry's best, most comprehensive SMS. Now, it all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you need to run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. And having local representation is a huge plus. Customizing Trax to your business, whether you're a one-person shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company, a representative consults with you to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. Trax always has the flexibility to do business how you need to do it, which means it can also grow as your business grows. And unlike the other guys, we'll be there for you after installation with the best training and support in the business. Yes, a learning management system tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. Visit us on the web at NAPATRAX, that's NAPATRACS.com.
I've been doing this for 10 years. You're the first one who brought up this rehearsing thing. It is such a strong thing. I got to do more on this. The training is really rehearsing. Let's get the word training away. Let's talk about education. Again, if a technology specialist in the bays goes to a scope and he comes back and he doesn't use what he learned. And so maybe we then say, go and train on what you learned or start rehearsing what your latest educational class was.
Right.
Don't rehearse it.
It's a good example with technicians. I think they tend to naturally know that they need to do that. When I was a tech, I remember going to a John Thornton misfire class. This is probably like in the early 2000s. 90% of it was over my head. And I was thinking, I had just opened my shop and I came from several different places, but I never really got into diagnostics that heavily. And then I learned all these new things that I didn't know, found out about all of these things I didn't know, took a bunch of notes. And I thought, man, am I ever going to be able to do this? I don't know. There's nobody else that works here. It's just me. How am I going to learn this? And when I put it into practice was really when I learned it. It might have taken me longer. I might not have been able to charge people for all the time I spent on it, but that was the cost of training to me, is the extra time I had to stay after work and learn or whatever I had to do. And we have technicians that do the same thing. The ones who are really committed to learning higher level technology, diagnosis, and, you know, programming or whatever it is they're doing, even mechanical stuff, they'll often, I'll find out that they got together with some other techs, you know, other techs in the industry on a Saturday and took a bunch of waveforms or something and put them, then shared them all and came back to their shops with a mental tool set and some, you know, computer tools to be able to do their job effectively and efficiently. They devoted to the training that allowed them to show up to work with a valuable skill set that they can exchange for a really good paycheck and doing a good work.
That's a great story. That's pure geek.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
When these guys get together, I love that. Wow. You talk about John Thornton, one of our best industry trainers, and to come back from one of his classes and be so humble. It's the old story, I don't know what I don't know, right?
Yeah.
I just don't know.
A lot of times that's what training and education is figuring out how little you know.
I know. And then take that and say, I got to do more, or I got to dig in, or I've got to find another class. Because a lot of times you go to the same class, different trainer, or even the same trainer a year ago, and you test, let me see, 1 to 10. I actually knew 4% or 40% of what I didn't the last time, and I still have more to go. And I think you take the education you get, you go back, you use it, you rehearse with it, you put it to real good usage. And I've always said that when you go to a seminar, I've said this for years and I've known it myself, when you go and learn something, and if you can come back and bring that to your people and you teach, even if you went to one of your people, you sent them to Vision to do a couple of technology classes and they came back, then let them teach for 1 hour what they learned. The teaching experience solidifies a lot of what they learned because they were able to re-speak it.
Absolutely.
I agree. I think that's one of the best ways to master a topic or a skill, is, you know, whatever, a profession, is to teach it. You'll get asked questions that you never thought of, making things you never thought of before.
Right.
Then you have to figure it out. So you're really learning as you're teaching.
What makes you really successful?
I don't know. When I get there, I'll let you know what it was.
Pick one. One of the greatest traits that you have that you say, I just can't believe this is working so well for me.
What makes us successful as a company and gives me the most amount of personal satisfaction has changed over the years. It used to be a hard diagnostic challenge or something on a car. Now, I think what makes us successful is the effort that the people who work for us put in toward fulfilling our mission. When someone, you know, in what gives me, you know, satisfaction about what I do now, making a good profit is always important so we can have the right resources to continue doing what we're doing and everybody else does too. But seeing people succeed and make improvements and achieve the highest level that they can in their career, achieving their goals, being a part of that is what makes me feel like I'm being successful.
10 years ago, you would have never thought that.
I don't think I would have.
Because you never got out of the bays.
Right.
I'll tell you exactly. What I think, one thing I think made Jay so successful is perseverance. If I had to say one thing, I mean,
yeah,
there were probably 100 times I'm on the phone with him and he's like, what the hell do I do? And if you don't mind me telling this story, one time he called me and he's like, I had to sell my snowmobiles. I had to sell something, this and that, to make payroll this year. And he's like, I got some cash in the drawer at home and that's all I got left. And he's like, I'm this close to going out of business, but he's far from that now. And because he stuck with it, I think that's what's made him successful.
I love that story.
Yeah, I've been there, you know, a couple of times. So that was actually around the time that I joined the what was RLO Training's Bottomline Impact Group.
Sure.
Now the Institute. So
BLIG.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great group.
Yeah.
Did you come over to the Institute after Cecil bought the RLO?
Yeah, they kept all the groups intact. So they're really still the same. Some of the same core people are still with those groups. Yeah. So the group three is still the same. Some of the same people.
And yeah.
Some new guys, some new people.
So I heard you just had a peer review, GPG?
We hosted a meeting, yeah. We hosted a group meeting.
You hosted a group meeting.
Right. So our group meetings, most of them are hosted at a shop or by a shop.
So you hosted, but they didn't review your place.
Oh, they did, yeah.
That's what I mean.
It is a peer review.
Yeah. Okay.
I just didn't think of it that.
How'd it go?
It went pretty well.
Did you work hard in prep for it, or they just said, come on in, I'm perfect?
No, we did a lot of upfront, you know, the low-hanging fruit. You know, I've been in the group long enough that I know to have, like, fire extinguisher signs and don't have the first aid kit in the bathroom and to make sure you have coat hooks and those kind of things. You know, just don't... Because I didn't want it to be a waste of people's time and just go there and find all this stuff that I already know I should have had done. So and that's how I'm going to get the most value out of it, is to have them find... I wanted them to dig deep and find problems, find room for improvement. Problems are opportunities.
Yeah.
So, and they did.
So you took care of the fluff that you didn't want them to find. The easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
The I walk by it every day. I'm not sure why for the last 4 years, but I've never fixed that. Now I've done it because I don't want them to pick on me. Go deep.
Right. That was our approach. And we did. The manager was involved in that meeting and... They came to the shop, other business owners.
I've watched it happen. I've actually watched a GPG group do a peer review on a shop, and it was exciting to be there. I thought there was a lot of fun going on. They found a lot of stuff, but the owner had a chance to say confession to himself for almost 6 months before and clean and paint the ceiling and get new lights and all this stuff. And he says, I always wanted to do this. There's nothing like the people that you work closely with, and that's why I'm such a believer in networking groups or peer groups like they have here at the Institute, to rock your socks, to make some profound changes, to let your conscience boil up and say, yeah, coulda, woulda, shoulda, gotta.
Right.
And so it's kind of like when you're having guests over the house, you don't clean the house so well until the guests come over. And it's similar, it's like your business, you know, you're going to prepare for that. So I do see a lot of value in that.
Deep cleaning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they did a good job with that, you know, with all that stuff. So I was proud of them. Yeah, I like the peer group process because it's more of a peer group. It's less of somebody standing there telling you things. We'll get information from the Institute, but I think we get just as much information from each other than we do from Aaron Woods. And he's a great facilitator. And I've looked into, over the years, I've looked into probably all the different coaching or consulting groups that there are. This one was the most customizable, meaning it was up to me. I'd be held accountable by my peers for the results that I say that I want to get. Of course, they're going to help me to figure out what that should look like. But if I say, well, I'm targeting a 20% net profit and these other KPIs, and also I want good employee retention, of course, and this many customers, this many cars per month, et cetera. It's me making those commitments to my peers and to the facilitator, and how I do it, it's just up to me. Nobody's going to tell me, well, you have to do this process this way. That might not work for me. I probably shouldn't deviate from it if I don't know anything else to do, but I wanted the flexibility to be able to customize my auto repair business to serve the customers the best possible way that it can, you know, and we're not robots. I don't treat my employees like robots. We do have certain things we have to do, and I have certain things I always have to do. But other than that, it's, you know, us as people figuring out, using our brains and being smart about things and figuring out how we want to do it. And that's what I think you need to have that in order for a business to be truly unique in the marketplace and have competitive advantages, because there has to be innovation. If you just follow a rigorous set process all the time and it has to be that way and everybody's doing it that way, then we're just too similar to, I think, like a box store model or something rather than.
When you say innovation, Jason, do you mean innovation in leadership, innovation in being able to retain and hire, innovation in policies, or are you talking about innovation in the shop with technology?
I would say all of it, you know, just anything. But when people are allowed to think for themselves, they might have a set of rules to follow. But when you hire smart people and they're allowed to think for themselves and the leadership listens to those people, big improvements can happen.
How do you hire smart people? Help me.
That's a good question. First of all, I think you have to have a business that attracts those kind of people. The smart people are looking to work for good businesses because they're smart enough to figure out, this place seems like they provide a good product to customers, and I'm smart enough to figure out that that's what businesses do, mainly. And they're probably also going to be able to provide a good workplace for me and have the revenue stream to pay me well for my knowledge, so I'm going to work there. So I think, and the culture is good. It seems like when I walk in there, or I've had technicians tell me they drove by my shop and looked at our Google reviews and all that stuff to see, and they went in, or, you know, kind of walked around just to see if everybody was smiling and telling jokes or if it was completely silent and all they heard was tools. That was part of their decision-making process and where to work.
Wow. And it goes back to this whole reputation management thing, Patrick. I think not only is the reputation management important to the client, it really has so much to do with being able to attract great people.
It's a recruiting tool. Absolutely. You know, everybody knows intuitively your reputation matters, right? You are your reputation. You want to be proud of that at the end of the day. Like, you know, it's a public thing when it's reputation management. So yeah, definitely a recruiting tool.
Home services. That's what you do. What is it exactly?
Well, I came up in that industry. I'm not in the industry anymore. I focus on helping local service companies with marketing, but I kind of grew up in the air conditioning and plumbing industry, and I had a lot of experience with the marketing and the operations side of the business.
What kind of marketing do shops have to do?
All of it.
I knew the answer to that.
You need a well-rounded approach.
So we're talking about internet, you're talking about social media, we're talking about video. Help me.
Well, as much as you can afford to do, but my advice is to usually small businesses is start with reputation management. That should be your baseline. If you're going to spend $1 on marketing, spend it on reputation.
And you're talking about getting reviews.
Getting reviews.
Okay.
Improve your public review profile. After that, I recommend direct response marketing. Whatever is the highest ROI for you, I wouldn't focus on social media or branding until you have a big budget.
Really? Yeah. What are you expecting somebody that has a big budget would spend on social media?
That's a good question. For automotive shops.
A three-store chain.
Well, like that's a good question. We're not doing a very good job with our social media.
But if you're growing, do you need it?
I think it can be done if the owner or someone, a spouse or somebody in the company wants to run it themselves. They can be pretty effective without any cost.
Mm-hmm.
One of our shops, the manager's spouse is doing it for us just because she likes to do it. And he said, hey, can I have Jen do our Facebook page? She's really good at that. I said, sure, we're not doing much with it anyway. Go have at it. Just put good stuff on there. And it's gotten a lot of followers. I don't know how to track it with a metric, kind of a KPI and numbers kind of guy. So I don't know how to track it. So if I was paying somebody to do it, I wouldn't know, you know, what I was looking for anyway. Not my strong point. I don't know what I should, you know, if I was going to hire a company to do it, and I don't want it to be cookie cutter, because I've tried to do that before where it's just all the same standard stuff on there all the time that I don't think people are really interested in.
Hire Patrick.
No, actually, I will actually say the best social media that I've seen is the most genuine. Yeah. And that comes from within the company, because no company you hire can have the same voice or promote your business like you do. And I think what he's doing is great. The best social media is like posting pictures of the team.
Organic.
Yeah, organic. That's a good way to put it. You know, somebody's birthday, it's so-and-so's birthday today, or so-and-so volunteers at this church over here and they did this event. And that's a community building. And actually, it's also a recruiting tool. You know, your social media outlets are recruiting tools. And I think that's the best way to do social media as a smaller, medium-sized business.
We can go a million different places. Are you happy with what you're getting out of life right now, Jason?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
There were times you were worried. Obviously, we've heard the story.
Yeah, there were times I was worried. There were times I was working way too many hours. 80, 100-hour weeks were normal for years.
Call that being stuck in a hobby. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say that you were in total struggle mode.
Oh, yeah.
I'm such a big fan of coaches and networking groups, because I really do think if you fix your attitude that I need help, I'm not Mr. Know-it-all, that, oh, I wanted to prove to the world that I can do it, but you don't really notice that you're not. Yeah, you are, but you don't want to admit it. A lot of people, you know, their egos get in the way. Take us to the day that you said, listen, I got to turn my life around and my business.
There's kind of two different times for two different types of turning it around. The financial, I knew I couldn't operate at a loss or a break even or whatever. It wasn't going to work. I wasn't going to be allowed to continue operating if I didn't make a profit.
You were done. So,
yeah, I was almost done a couple times, and I somehow, by the grace of God or willpower and whatever, all those things, and talking to people, talking it through with, you know, that's one of the things I do with my brother Pat, is just talk with him.
Whole sounding board.
He's just a smart guy. So yeah. Anyway, talk with a bunch of smart people and get their ideas. But hey, how do you think I can get out of this? I started that with RLO, which is now the Institute, in 2011.
In 2011?
John Woffler was working there, was the facilitator.
Great group, great facilitator. And did you come out of those first couple of meetings saying, whoa, this is going to be good, or I have a lot of work to do?
Both. I came out relieved because I thought, okay, I think I found some of the answers I was looking for, some of the solutions to my problems. I know what I need to do now. That's what I needed. I just needed
to know. Jason, what did it take for you to do the work? What kind of flip did you have to do in your world?
I had to slowly start working on the business and not so much on cars. So I was still working in the business, but on different things. I needed to increase my car count at the time. It was really low. I wasn't in that shop, still there, doing very well now in Lansing. But we didn't have enough cars to work on. It wasn't because we weren't doing good work. We were fixing cars right all the time with a great warranty, not enough vehicles to work on. Part of that had to do with not answering the phone correctly, you know, incorrect verbiage, not conveying the value that we provide to customers was part of the problem. And also part of it was marketing. We weren't doing enough to attract new customers. We weren't doing any customer retention. I didn't even know what our customer retention numbers were, or very many numbers. I knew how to read a P&L, but I didn't know about all the automotive specific KPIs that I should look at, and what a good benchmark would be for those.
What's next on your list of improving your skill set?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, what I'm working on right now, my skill set right now that I want to improve is teaching leadership, you know, becoming a better leader, and also how to teach other people how to lead would be an ultimate goal I'd like to achieve in that area.
That's great, because you've got a growing business.
And I can't be at all the shops all the time. I can be in them when I need to be or when I'm able to be, but somebody's got to steer the ship, you know.
But you don't want many Jasons. You want individuals, individual leaders.
Who believe in our core values and can carry out the mission.
And the culture of the business.
Do that, taking care of our customers and the employees who they oversee.
I love this. I think we covered a lot of great territory here. Good to have you on again. And Patrick, for you to just come in like that. I mean, you brought him to the Institute's conference here just because you wanted him to hear all this?
I'm hoping he's having a good time and learning some things.
I bet you will.
I learned something. These types of things I love, because I take a little bit of something from every one of them.
Yeah, think about all the marketing companies that are here that you can just go up and...
Yeah, or just guys like Jay or you. I could talk to you guys and learn something, you know?
Well,
which is all going to benefit all of us.
Yeah, nothing like having family here to run stuff by.
Yeah, it was kind of random. He just said, hey, you want to go to this thing with me? And I'm like, okay, I guess, sure.
Well, I kind of told him he was going. And then I asked him, and then after he said, I said, well, I already told him you're going, so.
They call that voluntold, right? I love it. Oh, this is great. Jason Brennan, Fine Tune Auto, and his brother Patrick. This is a blast. Thanks for your wisdom and your insights. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.